I believe he's out here. The phone rings inside. I'm not supposed to answer the phone with Miss Celia trying to keep up the big fat lie with Mr. Johnny. But she's not here, and it might be Abilene with more news. I go inside, lock the door behind me. Miss Celia residence? Lord, I hope it's not Miss Celia calling. This is Hilly Holbrook speaking. Who is this? My blood whooshes down from my head to my feet. I'm an empty, bloodless shell for about 5 seconds. I lower my voice, make it deep like a stranger.
This Dorena, Miss Celia's help.
Dorena? Why I use my sister's name? Dorena? I thought Minnie Jackson was Miss Foote's maid.
She quit.
Is that right? Let me speak to Mrs. Foote.
She out of town, down at the coast, for,
My mind's pedaling 1,000 miles an hour trying to come up with the details. Well, when is she coming back?
Long time.
Well, when she gets back, you tell her I called. Hilly Holbrook, Emerson 368, 40.
Yes, ma'am. I tell her.
In about 100 years. I hold onto the counter edge, waiting for my heart to stop hammering. It's not that Miss Hilly can't find me. I mean, she could just look up Minnie Jackson on Tick Road in the phone book and get my address. And it's not like I couldn't tell Miss Celia what happened. Tell her I'm not a thief. Maybe she believed me after all. But it's the terrible awful that ruins it all. 4 hours later, Miss Celia walks in with 5 big boxes stacked on top of each other. I help her tote them back to her bedroom, and then I stand very still outside her door to hear if she'll call up the society days like she does every day. Sure enough, I hear her pick up the phone, but she just hangs it back up again. The fool's listening for the dial tone again, in case someone tries to call. Even though it's the 3rd week of October, the summer beats on with the rhythm of a clothes dryer. The grass in Miss Celia's yard is still a full-blown green. The orange dahlias are still smiling drunk up at the sun. And every night, the damn mosquitoes come out for their blood hunt. My sweat pads went up 3 cents a box, and my electric fan is broke dead on my kitchen floor. On this October morning, 3 days after Miss Hilly called, I walk into work 1/2 hour early. I've got sugar sending the kids to school. The coffee grinds go in the fancy percolator. The water goes in the pot. I lean my bottom against the counter. Quiet. It's what I've been waiting for all night long. The Frigidaire picks up a hum where it left off. I put my hand on it to feel its vibration. You're awful early, Minnie. I open the refrigerator and bury my head inside. Morning, I say from the crisper. All I can think is, not yet. I fiddle with some artichokes, the cold spines prickling my hand. Bent over like this, my head pounds even harder. I'm gonna fix you and Mr. Johnny a roast, and I'm gonna fix some. But the words go all high-pitched on me. Manny? What happened? Miss Celia has made her way around the refrigerator door without me even realizing it. My face bunches up. The cut on my eyebrow breaks open again, the hot blood stinging like a razor. Usually, my bruises don't show. Honey, sit down. Did you take a spill? She props her hand on the hip of her pink nightgown. Did you trip on the fan cord again? I'm fine, I say, trying to turn so she can't see me. But Miss C is moving with me, bug-eyeing the cut like she's never seen anything so awful. I had a white lady tell me once that blood looks redder on a colored person. I take a wad of cotton from my pocket, hold it to my face. It's nothing, I say. I banged it in the bathtub. Manny, that thing's bleeding. I think you need some stitches. Let me get Dr. Neal over here. She grabs the phone from the wall and bangs it back. Oh, he's up at the hunting camp with Johnny. I'll call Dr. Steele then.
Miss C, I don't need no doctor.
You need medical attention, Minnie, she says, picking the phone back up.
Do I really have to say it? I grit my teeth to get it out. Them doctors ain't gonna work on no colored person, Miss C.
She hangs the phone up again. I turn and face the sink. I keep thinking, this ain't nobody's business. Just do your work. But I haven't had a minute's sleep. Leroy screamed at me all night, threw the sugar bowl upside my head, threw my clothes out on the porch. I mean, when he's drinking the Thunderbird is one thing, but... Oh. The shame is so heavy, I think it might pull me to the floor. Leroy, he wasn't on the Thunderbird this time. This time, he beat me stone cold sober. Go on out of here, Miss Celia. Let me get some work done. I say because I just need some time alone. At first, I thought Leroy had found out about my working with Miss Skeeter. It was the only reason I could come up with while he was beating me with his hand. But he didn't say a thing about it. He was just beating me for the pure pleasure of it. Minnie? Miss C says, eyeing the cut again. Are you sure you did that in the bathtub? I run the water just to get some noise in the room. I told you I did, and I did, all right? She gives me a suspicious look and points a finger at me. All right, but I'm fixing you a cup of coffee and I want you to just take the day off, okay? Miss C goes to the coffee percolator, pours two cups, but then stops. Looks at me, kind of surprised. I don't know how you take your coffee, Minnie. I roll my eyes. Same as you. She drops two sugars in both mugs. She gives me my coffee, and then she just stands, staring out the back window with her jaw set tight. I start washing last night's dishes, wishing she'd just leave me be. You know, she says kind of low, you can talk to me about anything, Minnie. I keep washing, feeling my nose start to flare. I've seen some things. Back when I lived in Sugar Ditch. In fact, I look up, about to give it to her for getting into my business, but Miss Celia says in a funny voice, we've got to call the police, Minnie. I put my coffee cup down so hard it splashes. Now look at here. I don't want no police getting involved. She points out the back window. There's a man, Minnie, out there. I turn to see where she's looking. A man, a naked man, is out by the azaleas. I blink to see if it's real. He's tall, mealy looking, and white. He's standing with his back to us, about 15 feet away. His brown, tangled hair is long like a hobo. Even from the back, I can tell he's touching himself. Who is he? Miss Celia whispers. What's he doing here? The man turns to face front, almost like he heard us. Both our jaws drop. He's holding it out like he's offering us a po' boy sandwich. Oh, God, Miss Celia says. His eyes search the window. They land right on mine, staring a dark line across the lawn. I shiver. It's like he knows me, Minnie Jackson. He's staring with his lip curled like I deserve every bad day I've ever lived, every night I haven't slept, every blow Leroy's ever given. Deserved it, and more. And his fist started punching his palm with a slow rhythm. Punch. Punch. Punch, like he knows exactly what he's going to do with me. I feel the throb, and my eyes start again.
We've got to call the police,
whispers Miss Celia. Her wide eyes dart to the phone on the other side of the kitchen, but she doesn't move an inch.
It'll take him 45 minutes just to find the house, I say. He could break the door down by then.
I run to the back door, flip the lock on. I dart to the front door,
and lock it, ducking down when I pass the back window. I stand up on my tiptoes, peek through the little square window on the back door. Miss Celia peeks around the side of the big window. The naked man's walking real slow up toward the house. He comes up the back steps. He tries the doorknob and I watch it jiggle, feeling my heart whopping against my ribs. I hear Miss Celia on the phone saying, "Police, we're getting intruded. There's a man, a naked man trying to get in the..." I jump back from the little square window just in time for the rock to smash through, feeling the sprinkles of shards hit my face. Through the big window, I see the man backing up like he's trying to see where to break it next. Lord, I'm praying. I don't want to do this. Don't make me have to do this. Again, he stares at us through the window. And I know we just can't sit here like a duck dinner waiting for him to get in. All he has to do is break a floor-to-ceiling window and step on in. Lord, I know what I have to do. I have to go out there. I have to get him first. "You stand back, Miss Celia," I say, and my voice is shaking. I go get Mr. Johnny's hunting knife, stealing the sheath from the bear. But the blade's so short, he'll have to be awful close for me to cut him, so I go get the broom, too. I look out, and he's in the middle of the yard, looking up at the house, figuring things out. I open the back door and slip out. Across the yard, the man smiles at me, short of mouth with about two teeth. He stops punching and goes back to stroking himself, smoothly, evenly now. "Lock the door," I hiss behind me. "Keep it locked." I hear the click. I tuck the knife in the bed of my uniform, make sure it's tight, and I grip the broom with both hands. "You get on out of here, you fool," I yell. But the man doesn't move. I take a few steps closer, and then so does he. And I hear myself praying, "Lord, protect me from this naked white man." "I got me a knife," I holler. I take some more steps and he does too. When I get 7 or 8 feet from him, I'm panting. We both stare. "Why, you're a fat nigger," he calls in a strange high voice and gives himself a long stroke. I take a deep breath and then I rush forward and swing with that broom. Whoosh! I've missed him by inches, and he dances away. I lunge again, and the man runs towards the house. He heads straight for the back door, where Miss Celia's face is in the window. "Nigger can't catch me! Nigger too fat to run!" He makes it to the steps, and I panic that he's gonna try and bust down the door, but then he flips around and runs along the side yard, holding that gigantic flopping po' boy in his hand. "You get out of here," I scream after him, feeling a sharp pain, knowing my cut's ripping wider. I rush him hard from the bushes to the pool, heaving and panting. He slows at the edge of the water, and I get close and land a good swing on his rear. Whack! The stick snaps, and the brush end flies off. "Didn't hurt." He jiggles his hand between his legs, hitching up his knees. "Have a little pecker pie, nigger. Come on, get you some pecker pie." I dive around him, back to the middle of the yard, but the man is too tall and too fast, and I'm getting slower. My swings are flying wild, and soon, I'm hardly even jogging. I stop, lean over, breathing hard, the short broken-off broom in my hand. I look down, and the knife, it is gone. As soon as I back up, wham, I stagger. The ringing comes harsh and loud, making me totter. I cover my ear, but the ringing gets louder. He's punched me on the same side as the cut. He comes closer, and I close my eyes, knowing what's about to happen to me, knowing I've got to move away, but I can't. Where's the knife? Does he have the knife? The ring is like a nightmare. "You get out of here before I kill you!" I hear it like it's in a tin can. My hearing's half gone, and I open my eyes. There's Miss Celia in her pink satin nightgown. She's got a fire poker in her hand, heavy, sharp. "White lady want a taste of pecker pie too?" He flops his penis around at her, and she steps closer to the man, slow like a cat. I take a deep breath while the man jumps left, then right, laughing and chomping his toothless gums. But Miss Celia just stands still. After a few seconds, he frowns, looks disappointed that Miss Celia isn't doing anything. She's not swinging or frowning or hollering. He looks over at me.
What about you? Nigger too tired to crack?
The man's jaw goes sideways, and blood bursts out of his mouth. He wobbles around, turns, and Miss Celia whacks the other side of his face, too, like she just wanted to even him up. The man stumbles forward, looking nowhere in particular. Then he falls face flat.
Lordy, you got him, I say. But in the back of my head, there's this voice asking me real calm, like we're just having tea out here. Is this really happening? Is a white woman really beating up a white man to save me? Or did he shake my brain pan loose and I'm over there dead on the ground? I try to focus my eyes. Miss Celia, she's got a snarl on her lips. She raises her rod and kawam across the back of his knees. This ain't happening, I decide. This is just too damn strange. Kawam! She hits him across his shoulders, making an sound every time.
I said you got him now, Miss Celia, I say.
But evidently, Miss Celia doesn't think so. Even with my ears ringing, it sounds like chicken bones cracking. I stand up straighter, make myself focus my eyes before this turns into a homicide.
He down, Miss Celia, I say.
Fact he...
I struggle to catch the poker.
He might be dead.
I finally catch it, and she lets go, and the poker flies into the yard. Miss Celia steps back from him, spits in the grass, blood spattered across a pink satin nightgown, the fabric stuck to her legs.
He ain't dead,
Miss Celia says.
He close, I say. Did he hit you hard, Minnie? She asks, but she's staring down at him. Did he hurt you bad?
I can feel blood running down my temple, but I know it's from the sugar bowl cut that split open again.
Not as bad as you hurt him, I say.
The man groans and we both jump back. I grab the poker and the broom handle from the grass. I don't give her either one. He rolls halfway over. His face is bloody on both sides. His eyes are swelling shut. His jaw's been knocked off his hinge, and somehow he still brings himself to his feet. And then he starts to walk away, a pathetic wobbly thing. He doesn't even look back at us. We just stand there and watch him hobble through the prickly boxwood bushes and disappear in the trees.
He ain't gonna get far, I say, and I keep my grip on that poker. You whooped him pretty good.
You think? She says. I give her a look.
Like Joe Louis with a tie.
She brushes a clump of blonde hair out of her face, looks at me like it kills her that I got hit. Suddenly, I realize I ought to thank her, but truly, I've got no words to draw from. This is a brand new invention we've come up with. All I can say is,
you look mighty sure of yourself.
I used to be a good fighter. She looks out along the boxwoods, wipes off a sweat with a palm. If you'd known me 10 years ago. She's got no goo on her face. Her hair's not sprayed. Her nightgown's like an old prairie dress. She takes a deep breath through her nose and I see it. I see the white trash girl she was 10 years ago. She was strong. She didn't take no shit from nobody. Miss Celia turns, and I follow her back to the house. I see the knife in the rose bush and snatch it up. Lord, if that man had gotten hold of this, we'd be dead. In the guest bathroom, I clean the cut, cover it with a white bandage. The headache is bad. When I come out, I hear Miss Celia on the phone, talking to the Madison County Police. I wash my hands, wonder how an awful day could turn even worse. It seems like at some point, you just run out of awful. I try to get my mind on real life again. Maybe I'll stay at my sister Octavia's tonight. Show Leroy I'm not going to put up with it anymore. I go in the kitchen, put the beans on the simmer. Who am I fooling? I already know I'll end up at home tonight. I hear Miss Celia hang up with the police, and then I hear her perform her usual pitiful check to make sure the line is free. That afternoon, I do a terrible thing. I drive past Abilene walking home from the bus stop. Abilene waves, and I pretend I don't even see my own best friend on the side of the road in her bright white uniform. When I get to my house, I fix an ice pack for my eye. The kids aren't home yet, and Leroy is asleep in the back. I don't know what to do about anything. Not Leroy, not Miss Hilly. Never mind I got boxed in the ear by a naked white man this morning. I just sit and stare at my oily yellow walls. Why can't I ever get these walls clean? Minnie Jackson, you too good to give old Abilene a ride. I sigh and turn my sore head so she can see. Oh, she says. I look back at the wall. Abilene, I say, and I hear myself sigh. You ain't gonna believe my day. Come on over. I'll make you some coffee. Before I walk out, I peel that glaring bandage off, slip it in my pocket with my ice pack. On some folks around here, a cut-up eye wouldn't even get a comment. But I've got good kids, a car with tires, and a refrigerator freezer. I'm proud of my family, and the shame of the eye is worse than the pain. I follow Abilene through the side yards and backyards, avoiding the traffic and the looks. I'm glad she knows me so well. In her little kitchen, Abilene puts the coffee pot on for me, the tea kettle for herself. So what you gonna do about it? Abilene asks, and I know she means the eye. We don't talk about me leaving Leroy. Plenty of black men leave their families behind like trash in a dump, but it's just not something the colored woman do. We've got the kids to think about. Thought about driving up to my sister's, but I can't take the kids. They got school. Ain't nothing wrong with the kids missing school a few days. Not if you're protecting yourself. I fasten the bandage back, hold the ice pack to it so the swelling won't be so bad when my kids see me tonight. You tell Miss Celia you slip in the bathtub again? Yeah, but she know. Why? What'd she say? Abilene asks. It's what she did. And I tell Abilene all about how Miss Celia beat the naked man with the fire poker this morning. Feels like 10 years ago. That man had been black. He'd be dead in the ground. Police would have had an all points alert for 53 states, Abilene say. All her girly high heel ways and she just about kill him, I say. Abilene laughs. What'd he call it again? Pecker pie, crazy Whitfield fool. I have to keep myself from smiling because I know it'll make the cut split open again. Lord, Minnie, you have had some things happen to you. How come she ain't got no problem defending herself from that crazy man, but she can chase after Miss Hilly like she just begging for abuse? I say this even though Miss Celia getting her feelings hurt is the least of my worries right now. It just feels kind of good to talk about someone else's screwed up life. Almost sounds like you care, Abilene says, smiling. She just don't see them. The lines. Not between her and me, not between her and Hilly. Abilene takes a long sip of her tea. Finally, I look at her. What you so quiet for? I know you got an opinion about all this. You gonna accuse me of philosophizing? Go ahead, I say. I ain't afraid of no philosophy. It ain't true. Say what? You talking about something that don't exist. I shake my head at my friend. Not only is they lines, but you know as good as I do where them lines be drawn. Abilene shakes her head. I used to believe in them. I don't anymore. They in our heads. People like Miss Hilly is always trying to make us believe they there. But they ain't. I know they there because you get punished for crossing them, I say. At least I do. Lots of folks think if you talk back to your husband, you cross the line, and that justifies punishment. You believe in that lie? I scowl down at the table. You know I ain't studying no line like that. Because that line ain't there, except in Leroy's head. Lines between black and white ain't there neither. Some folks just made those up a long time ago. And that go for the white trash and the society ladies, too. Thinking about Miss Celia coming out with that fire poker when she could have hid behind the door, I don't know. I get a twinge. I want her to understand how it is with Miss Hilly, but how do you tell a fool like her? So, you saying there ain't no line between the help and the boss either? Abilene shakes her head. They's just position, like on a checkerboard. Who worked for who don't mean nothing. So I ain't crossing no line if I tell Miss Celia the truth, that she ain't good enough for Miss Hilly. I pick my cup up. I'm trying hard to get this, but my cut's thumping against my brain. But wait, if I tell her Miss Hilly's out of her league, then ain't I saying they is a line? Abilene laughs. She pats my hand. All I'm saying is, kindness don't have no boundaries. I put the ice to my head again. Well, maybe I'll try to tell her before she goes to that benefit and makes a big pink fool of herself. You going this year? Abilene asks. If Miss Hilly gonna be in the same room as Miss Celia telling her lies about me, I want to be there. Plus, Sugar wants to make a little money for Christmas. Be good for her to start learning, party serving. I'll be there too, says Abilene. Miss Leafo done asked me 3 months ago would I do a lady finger cake for the auction. That bland old thing again. Why them white folks like the lady finger so much? I can make a dozen cake takes better than that. They think it be real European. Abilene shakes her head. I feel bad for Miss Skeeter. I know she don't want to go, but Miss Hiller tell her if she don't, she lose her officer job. I drink down the rest of Abilene's good coffee, watch the sun sink. The air turns cooler through the window. I guess I gotta go, I say, even though I'd rather spend the rest of my life right here in Abilene's cozy little kitchen having her explain the world to me. That's what I love about Abilene. She can take the most complicated things in life and wrap them up so small and simple, they'll fit right in your pocket. You and the kids want to come stay with me? No. I untack the bandage, slip it back in my pocket. I want him to see me, I say, staring down at my empty coffee cup. See what he done to his wife. Call me on the phone if it gets rough. You hear me? I don't need no phone. You'll hear him screaming for mercy all the way over here. The thermometer by Miss C's kitchen window sinks down from 79 to 60 to 55 in less than an hour. At last, a cold front's moving in, bringing cool air from Canada or Chicago or somewhere. I'm picking the lady peas for stones, thinking about how we're breathing the same air those Chicago people breathed 2 days ago. Wondering if, for no good reason, I started thinking about Sears and Roebuck or Shake and Bake. Would it be because some Illinoisan had thought it 2 days ago? It gets my mind off my troubles for about 5 seconds. It took me a few days, but I finally came up with a plan. It's not a good one, but at least it's something. I know that every minute I wait is a chance for Miss Celia to call up Miss Hilly. I wait too long, and she'll see her at the benefit next week. It makes me sick thinking about Miss Celia running up to those girls like they're best friends, the look on her made-up face when she hears about me. This morning, I saw the list by Miss Celia's bed of what else she needs to do for the benefit, get fingernails done, go to the pantyhose store, get tuxedo martinized and pressed, call Miss Hilly.
Minnie, does this new hair color look cheap?
I just look at her.
Tomorrow I am marching down to Fannie Mae's and getting it recolored.
She's sitting at the kitchen table and holds up a handful of sample strips splayed out like playing cards.
What do you think, Butter Batch or Marilyn Monroe? Why don't you like your own natural color?
Not that I have any idea what that might be. But it's sure not the brass bell or the sickly white on those cards in her hand.
I think this Butter Batch is a little more festive for the holidays and all, don't you?
If you want your head to look like a butterball turkey.
Miss Celia giggles. She thinks I'm kidding. Oh, and I have to show you this new fingernail polish. She scrambles in a purse, finds a bottle of something so pink, it looks like you could eat it.
She opens the bottle and starts painting on her nails.
Please, Miss Celia, don't do that mess on the table. It don't come. Look, isn't it the thing? And I found two dresses to match it just exactly.
She scoots off and comes back holding two hot pink gowns, smiling all over them. They're long to the flow, covered in sparkles and sequins, slits up the leg. Both hang by straps thin as chicken wire. They are going to tear her up at that party.
Which one do you like better? Asks Miss Celia.
I point to the one without the low-cut neckline.
Oh, see now, I would have chosen this other one. Listen to the little rattle it makes when I walk.
She swishes the dress from side to side. I think about her rattling around the party in that thing. Whatever the white version of a juke joint hussy is, that's what they'll be calling her. She won't even know what's happening. She'll just hear the hissing. You know, Miss Celia, I speak kind of slow, like it's just not coming to me.
Instead of calling them other ladies, maybe you should call up Miss Skeeter Phelan. I heard she real nice.
I asked Miss Skeeter this favor a few days ago to try and be nice to Miss Celia, steer her away from those ladies. Up to now, I've been telling Miss Skeeter not to dare call Miss Celia back. But now, it's the only option I have.
I think you and Miss Skeeter will get along just fine, I say, and I crank out a big smile.
Oh, no. Miss Celia looks at me all wide-eyed, holding up those saloon-looking gowns.
Don't you know? The league members can't stand Skeeter Phelan anymore.
My hands knuckle into fists. You ever met her?
Oh, I heard all about it at Fannie Mae's sitting under the heating hood. They said she's the biggest embarrassment this town's ever seen. Said she was the one who put all those toilets on Hilly Holbrook's front yard. Remember that picture that showed up in the paper a few months ago?
I grind my teeth together to keep my real words in. I said, have you ever met her?
Well, no. But if all those girls don't like her, then she must be... Well, she...
Her words trail off like it's just hitting what she's saying. Sickness, disgust, disbelief, it all wraps together in me like a ham roll. To keep myself from finishing that sentence for, I turn to the sink. I dry my hands to the point of hurting. I knew she was stupid, but I never knew she was a hypocrite.
Minnie?
Miss Celia says behind me.
Ma'am?
She keeps her voice quiet, but I hear the shame in it.
They didn't even ask me in the house. They made me stand out on the steps like a vacuum salesman.
I turn around, and her eyes are down on the floor.
Why, Minnie?
She whispers.
What can I say? Your clothes, your hair, your boobies in the size nothing sweaters?
I remember what Abilene said about the lines and the kindness. I remember what Abilene heard at Miss Leifold's of why the league ladies don't like her. It seems like the kindest reason I can think of.
Because they know about you getting pregnant that first time, and it makes them mad you getting knocked up and marrying one of their men's?
They know about that?
and especially since Miss Hilly and Mr. Johnny went steady for so long. She blinks at me a second.
Well, Johnny said he used to date her, but was it really for that long?
I shrug like I don't know, but I do. When I started working at Miss Walters 8 years ago, all Miss Hilly talked about was how she and Johnny were going to get married someday. I say, I reckon they broke up right around the time he met you. I'm waiting for it to hit her. That her social life is doomed. That there is no sense in calling the league ladies anymore. But Miss Celia looks like she's doing high math, the way she's got her brow scrunched up. Then her face starts to clear like she's figured something out.
So, Hilly, she probably thinks I was fooling around with Johnny while they were still going steady then.
Probably. And from what I hear, Miss Hill is still sweet on him. She never got over him. I'm thinking, any normal person would automatically find a woman buying for her husband. But I forgot, Miss Celia is not a normal person.
Well, no wonder she can't stand me,
she says, grinning with all she's got.
They don't hate me. They hate what they think I did.
What? They hate you because they think you white trash.
Well, I'm just going to have to explain it to Hilly. Let her know that I am not a boyfriend stealer. In fact, I'll tell Hilly on Friday night when I see her at the benefit.
She's smiling like she just discovered the cure for polio, the way she's worked out a plan to win Miss Hilly over. At this point, I am too tired to fight it. On benefit Friday, I work late cleaning that house top to bottom. Then I fry up a plate of pork chops. The way I figure it, the shinier the floors, the clearer the window panes, the better my chances are of having a job on Monday. But the smartest thing I can do, if Mr. Johnny's got a say in this, is plant my pork chop in his hand. He's not supposed to be home until 6 tonight, so at 4:30, I wipe the counters one last time, then head to the back where Miss C has been getting ready for the past 4 hours. I like to do their bed and bathroom last so it's clean for when Mr. Johnny gets home.
Miss Celia, now what is going on in here?
I mean, she's got stockings dangling from chairs, pocketbooks on the floor, enough costume jewelry for a whole family of hookers, 45 pairs of high-heeled shoes, underthings, overcoats, panties, brassieres, and a half-empty bottle of white wine on the chiffon robe with no coaster under it. I start picking up all her stupid silky things and piling them on the chair. The least I can do is run Hoover.
What time is it, Minnie?
Miss Celia says from the bathroom.
Johnny will be home at 6, you know.
Ain't even 5 yet, I say. But I gotta go soon. I have to pick up sugar and get us to the party by 6:30 to serve.
Oh, Minnie, I'm so excited.
I hear Miss Celia's dress swishing behind me.
What do you think?
I turn around. Oh, my Lord. I might as well be Little Stevie Wonder. I'm so blind about that dress. Hot pink and silver sequins glitter from her extra-large boobies all the way to her hot pink toes. Miss Celia, I whisper, tuck yourself in before you lose something. Miss Celia shimmies the dress up.
Isn't it gorgeous? Ain't it just the prettiest thing you've ever seen? I feel like I'm a Hollywood movie star.
She bats her fake-lashed eyes. She is rouged, painted, and plastered with makeup. The Butterbatch hairdo is poofed up around her head like an Easter bunny. One leg peeks out in a high, thigh-bearing slit, and I turn away too embarrassed to look. Everything about her oozes sex, sex, and more sex. Where you get them fingernails?
At the beauty box this morning? Oh, Minnie, I'm so nervous. I've got butterflies.
She takes a heavy swig from her wine glass, kind of teeters a little in her high heels.
What you had to eat today?
Nothing. I'm too nervous to eat. What about these earrings? Are they dangling enough?
Take that dress off. Let me fix you some biscuits right quick.
Oh, no. I can't have my stomach poking out. I can't eat anything.
I head for the wine bottle on the gazillion-dollar chiffon robe, but Miss Celia gets to it before me. Dumps the rest into her glass. She hands me the empty and smiles. I pick up her fur coat she's got tossed on the floor. She's getting pretty used to having a maid. I saw that dress 4 days ago, and I knew it looked hussified. Of course, she had to pick the one with the low neckline. But I had no idea what would happen when she stuffed herself inside it. She's popping out like a corn cob in Crisco. With 12 benefits under my belt, I've hardly seen so much as a bare elbow there, much less bosoms and shoulders. She goes in the bathroom and dabs some more rouge on her gaudy cheeks. "Miss C," I say. And I close my eyes, praying for the right words. "Tonight, when you see Miss Hilly." She smiles into the mirror. "I got it all planned. When Johnny goes to the bathroom, I'm just going to tell her that they were over with by the time me and Johnny started getting together." I sigh. "That ain't what I mean. It's, she might say some things about me." "You want me to tell Hilly you said hi?" she says, coming out of the bathroom. "Since she worked all those years for her mama?" I just stare at her in her hot pink getup, so full of wine she's almost cross-eyed. She burps a little. There really isn't any use telling her now, in this state. "No, ma'am, don't tell her nothing," I sigh. She gives me a hug. "I'll see you tonight. I'm so glad you'll be there so I have somebody to talk to." "I'll be in the kitchen, Missy." "Oh, and I've got to find that little doohickey pen." She teeters over to the dresser, yanks out all the things I just put away. "Just stay home, fool," is what I want to say to her, but I don't. It's too late. With Miss Hiller at the helm, it's too late for Miss Celia, and Lord knows it is too late for me.
The Benefit, Chapter 25. The Jackson Junior League annual ball and benefit is known simply as The Benefit to anyone who lives within a 10-mile radius of town. At 7 o'clock on a cool November night, guests will arrive at the Robert E. Lee Hotel Bar for the cocktail hour. At 8 o'clock, the doors from the lounge will open to the ballroom. Swags of green velvet have been hung around the windows, adorned with bouquets of real holly berries. Along the windows stand tables with auction lists and the prizes. The goods have been donated by members and local shops, and the auction is expected to generate more than $6,000 this year, $500 more than last year. The proceeds will go to the poor, starving children of Africa. In the center of the room, beneath a gigantic chandelier, 28 tables are dressed and ready for the sit-down dinner to be served at 9. A dance floor and bandstand are off to the side, opposite the podium where Hilly Holbrook will give her speech. After the dinner, there will be dancing. Some of the husbands will get drunk, but never the member wives. Every member considers herself a hostess and will be heard asking one another, "Is it going all right? Has Hilly said anything?" Everyone knows it is Hilly's night. At 7 on the dot, couples begin drifting through the front doors, handing their furs and overcoats to the colored men in gray morning suits. Hilly, who's been there since 6 o'clock sharp, wears a long taffeta maroon-colored dress. Ruffles clutch at her throat. Swathes of material hide her body. Tight-fitted sleeves run all the way down her arms. The only genuine parts of Hilly you can see are her fingers and her face. Some women wear slightly saucier evening gowns, with bare shoulders here and there, but long kid leather gloves ensure they don't have more than a few inches of epidermis exposed. Of course, every year some guest will show up with a hint of leg or a shadow of cleavage. Not much is said, though. They aren't members, those kind. Celia Foote and Johnny arrive later than they'd planned, at 7:25. When Johnny came home from work, he stopped in the doorway of the bedroom, squinted at his wife, briefcase still in his hand. "Celia," You think that dress might be a little too, open at the top? Celia had pushed him toward the bathroom.
Oh, Johnny, you men don't know the first thing about fashion. Now hurry up and get ready.
Johnny gave up before he even tried to change Celia's mind. They were already late as it was. They walk in behind Dr. and Mrs. Ball. The Balls step left. Johnny steps right. And for a moment, it is just Celia, standing under the holly berries in her sparkling hot pink gown. In the lounge, the air seems to still. Husbands drinking their whiskies stop in mid-sip, spotting this pink thing at the door. It takes a second for the image to register. They stare, but don't see. Not yet. But as it turns real, real skin, real cleavage, perhaps not so real blonde hair, their faces slowly light up. They all seem to be thinking the same thing. Finally. But then, feeling the fingernails of their wives, also staring, digging into their arms, their foreheads wrinkle. Their eyes hint remorse, as marriages are scorned. She never lets me do anything fun. Youth is remembered. Why didn't I go to California that summer? First loves are recalled. Roxanne. All of this happens in a span of about 5 seconds, and then it is over, and they are left just staring. William Holbrook tips his half-gin martini into a pair of patent leather shoes. The shoes are attached to the feet of his biggest campaign contributor.
"Oh, Claiborne, forgive my clumsy husband," says Hilly. "William, get him a handkerchief."
But neither man moves. Neither, frankly, really cares to do more than just stare. Hilly's eyes follow the trail of gazes and finally land on Celia. The inch of skin showing on Hilly's neck grows taut.
"Look at the chest on that one," an old geezer says. "Feel like I'm not a year over 75 looking at those things."
The geezer's wife, Eleanor Coswell, an original founder of the League, frowns. "Bosoms," she announces with a hand to her own, "are for bedrooms and breastfeedin', not for occasions with dignity."
"Well, what do you want her to do, Eleanor? Leave them at home?"
"I want her to cover them up."
Celia grabs for Johnny's arm as they make their way into the room. She teeters a bit as she walks, but it's not clear if it's from alcohol or the high heels. They drift around, talking to other couples, or at least Johnny talks. Celia just smiles. A few times she blushes, looks down at herself.
"Johnny, do you think I might have overdressed a little for this thing? The invitation said formal, but these girls here all look like they're dressed for church."
Johnny gives her a sympathetic smile. He'd never tell her, "I told you so," and instead whispers, "You look gorgeous, but if you're cold, you can put my jacket on."
"I can't wear a man's jacket with a ball gown."
She rolls her eyes at him, sighs.
"But thanks, honey."
Johnny squeezes her hand, gets her another drink from the bar, her fifth, although he doesn't know this. "Try and make some friends. I'll be right back." He heads for the men's room. Celia is left standing alone. She tugs a little at the neckline of her dress, shimmies down deeper into the waist.
"There's a hole in the bucket, dear Liza, dear Liza."
Celia sings an old county fair song softly to herself, tapping her foot, looking around the room for somebody she recognizes. She stands on tiptoe and waves over the crowd.
"Hey, Hilly! Yoo-hoo!"
Hilly looks up from her conversation a few couples away. She smiles, gives a wave, but as Celia comes toward her, Hilly heads off into the crowd. Celia stops where she is, takes another sip of her drink. All around her, tight little groups have formed, talking and laughing, she guesses, about all those things people talk and laugh about at parties. "Oh, hey there, Julia," Celia calls. They'd met at one of the few parties Celia and Johnny attended when they first got married. Julia Fenway smiles, glances around. "It's Celia, Celia Foote. How are you? Oh, I just love that dress. Where'd you get that? Over at the jewel tailor shop?" "No, Warren and I were in New Orleans a few months ago." Julia looks around, but there is no one near enough to save her. "And you look very glamorous tonight." Celia leans closer. "Well, I asked Johnny, but you know how men are. Do you think I'm a tad overdressed?" Julia laughs, but not once does she look Celia in the eye. "Oh, no, you're just perfect." A fellow leaguer squeezes Julia on the forearm. "Julia, we need you over here a second. Excuse us." They walk away, heads leaned close together, and Celia is alone again. 5 minutes later, the doors to the dining room slide open. The crowd moves forward. Guests find their tables using the tiny cards in their hands as oohs and ahs come from the bidden tables along the walls. They are full of silver pieces and hand-sewn day gowns for infants, cotton handkerchiefs, monogrammed hand towels, a child's tea set imported from Germany. Minnie is at a table in the back, polishing glasses. "Abilene," she whispers. "There she is." Abilene looks up, spots the woman who knocked on Miss Leifold's door a month ago.
"Ladies better hold on to their husbands tonight," she says.
Minnie jerks the cloth around the rim of a glass.
"Let me know if you see her talking to Miss Hilly." "Ah, well, I've been doing a superpower prayer for you all day." "Look, there Miss Walters, old bat, and there Miss Skeeter."
Skeeter has on a long-sleeved black velvet dress, scooped at the neck, setting off her blonde hair, her red lipstick. She has come alone and stands in a pocket of emptiness. She scans the room, looking bored, then spots Abilene and Minnie. They all look away at once. One of the other colored helpers, Clara, moves to their table, picks up a glass. "Abilene," she whispers, but keeps her eyes on her polishing. "That the one?"
"One what?"
"One who taken down the stories about the colored help. What's she doing it for? Why she interested? I hear she been coming over to your house every week."
Abilene lowers her chin.
"Now look, we got to keep her a secret."
Minnie looks away. No one outside the group knows she's part of this. They only know about Abilene. Clara nods.
"Don't worry, I ain't telling nobody nothing."
Skeeter jots a few words on her pad. Notes for the newsletter article about the benefit. She looks around the room, taking in the swags of green, the holly berries, red roses, and dried magnolia leaves set as centerpieces on all the tables. Then her eyes land on Elizabeth, a few feet away, ticking through her handbag. She looks exhausted, having had her baby only a month ago. Skeeter watches as Celia Foote approaches Elizabeth. When Elizabeth looks up and sees who she's been surrounded by, she coughs, draws her hand up to her throat as if she's shielding herself from some kind of attack.
"Not sure which way to turn, Elizabeth?" asks Skeeter.
"What? Oh, Skeeter, how are you?"
Elizabeth offers a quick, wide smile.
"I was feeling so warm in here. I think I need some fresh air."
Skeeter watches Elizabeth rush away, at Celia Foote rattling after Elizabeth in her awful dress. "That's the real story," Skeeter thinks.
Not the flower arrangements or how many pleats are around the rear end of Hilly's dress. This year, it's all about the Celia Foote fashion catastrophe. Moments later, dinner is announced, and everyone settles into their assigned seats. Celia and Johnny have been seated with a handful of out-of-town couples, friends of friends who aren't really friends of anyone at all. Skeeter is seated with a few local couples, not President Hilly or even Secretary Elizabeth this year. The room is full of chatter, praise for the party, praise for the Chateaubriand. After the main course, Hilly stands behind the podium. There is a round of applause, and she smiles at the crowd. "Good evening. I sure do thank y'all for coming tonight. Everybody enjoying their dinner?" There are nods and rumbles of consent. "Before we start the announcements, I'd like to go ahead and thank the people who are making tonight such a success." Without turning her head from the audience, Hilly gestures to her left, where 2 dozen colored women have lined up, dressed in their white uniforms. 1 dozen colored men are behind them in gray and white tuxedos. "Let's give a special round of applause to the help for all the wonderful food they cooked and served and for the desserts they made for the auction." Here, Hilly picks up a card and reads, "In their own way, they are helping the league to reach its goal to feed the poor, starving children of Africa, a cause, I'm sure, dear to their own hearts as well." The white people at the tables clap for the maids and servers. Some of the servers smile back. Many, though, stare at the empty air just above the crowd's heads. "Next, we'd like to thank those non-members in this room who have given their time and help, for it's you who made our job that much easier." There is light applause, some cold smiles and nods between members and non-members. Such a pity, the members seem to be thinking. Such a shame you girls haven't the gentility to join our club. Hilly goes on, thanking and recognizing in a musical, patriotic voice. Coffee is served, and the husbands drink theirs, but most of the women keep rapt attention on Hilly. "Thanks to Boone Hardware, let us not forget Ben Franklin's dime store." She concludes the list with, "And of course, we thank our anonymous contributor of supplies for the Home Help Sanitation Initiative." A few people laugh nervously, but most turn their heads to see if Skeeter has had the gall to show up. "I just wish, instead of being so shy, you'd step up and accept our gratitude. We honestly couldn't have accomplished so many installations without you." Skeeter keeps her eyes on the podium, her face stoic and unyielding. Hilly gives a quick, brilliant smile. "And finally, a special thanks to my husband, William Holbrook, for donating a weekend at his deer camp." She smiles down at her husband, adds in a lower tone, "And don't forget, voters, Holbrook for State Senate." The guests offer an amicable laugh at Hilly's plug. "What's that, Virginia?" Hilly cups her ear, then straightens. "No, I'm not running with him. But congressman with us tonight, if you don't straighten this thing out with the separate schools, don't think I won't come down there and do it myself." There is more laughter at this. Senator and Mrs. Whitworth, seated at the table in the front, nod and smile. At her table in the back, Skeeter looks down at her lap. They spoke earlier, during the cocktail hour. Mrs. Whitworth steered the senator away from Skeeter before he could give her a second hug. Stuart didn't come. Once the dinner and the speech have ended, people get up to dance. Husbands head for the bar. There is a scurry to the auction tables for last-minute bids. 2 grandmothers are in a bidding war over the child's antique tea set. Someone started the rumor
that it had belonged to royalty and had been smuggled out via donkey cart across Germany until it eventually wound up in the Magnolia Antique Store on Fairview Street. The price shot up from $15 to $85 in no time. In the corner by the bar, Johnny yawns. Celia's brow is scrunched together. I can't believe what she said about non-members helping. She told me they didn't need any help this year. Well, you can help out next year, Johnny says. Celia spots Hilly. For the moment, Hilly has only a few people around her. Johnny, I'll be right back, Celia says. And then, let's get the hell out of here. I'm sick of this monkey suit. Richard Cross, who's a member of Johnny's duck camp, slaps Johnny's back. They say something, then laugh. Their gazes sweep across the crowd. Celia almost makes it to Hilly this time, only to have Hilly slip behind the podium table. Celia backs away, as if she's afraid to approach Hilly where she'd seemed so powerful a few minutes ago. As soon as Celia disappears into the ladies'